from San Francisco, California. This is Mostly Music. And now, your hosts, Ignatius Palafox and the Low Spark.
Oh, yes. Welcome back. We are back. It is a new year. Thank you for joining us once again.
Welcome back. I am the Low Spark.
I'm Ignatius Palafox, and this is... Who is this?
This is Alice Coltrane.
That's right.
I didn't know she was that good.
She's incredible.
I knew she was a pianist amazing. That played with John Coltrane, and she...
She was John Coltrane's wife, but she was not just John Coltrane's wife. And to only say that would be selling her short, but yes, she is incredible.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm glad we finally giving her a little time. You know, she was started off like in the 50s. You know, she was mainly like a bebop. Sort of pianist, you know, played with Kenny Burrell and studied with Bud Powell. And in the early 60s, she was touring with Terry Gibbs in Paris. And that's when she met John Coltrane. And
the most interesting part about Alice Coltrane, we discussed this before, is that she didn't discover her voice until later in life.
That's right.
Until, you know, closer to her death in the early 2000s, she discovered her voice because she would chant and sing in an ashram church that she had started.
Exactly. And exactly. I'm glad you know that. That's incredible.
Well, it's just one of those
random
facts.
Agoura Hills in L.A. or L.A. County. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. She never really sang before that. And
then she started recording tracks for, I guess it was a retrospective of John Coltrane's work with her son, Ravi. And then they realized, oh, you know, my mom can sing. Alice can sing. Let's put her down on jazz tracks. And she sang. It's good.
She's great.
She's amazing.
She's natural. Yeah, exactly. And she, at that ashram, she had later in life produced like three sets of essentially albums, but they were, you know, just for the spiritual uses and, you know, the ecstatic and music for the people, not the masses. She wasn't releasing these publicly at all, but they were, it was three parts. And last May of 2017, they released the first part. It's unbelievable.
I gotta check that out.
Yeah. And she's singing, of course, but it's very, it's a lot more spiritual. Very Eastern, you know, of course. It's called World Spirituality Classics Number 1. Yeah, the ecstatic music.
She's fucking good in the Coltrane. Piano, man.
This isn't, I didn't know, what we're listening to, though, by the way. Yeah, no. So this is from her first album, A Monastic Trio. So even from the beginning, she plays harp. She, of course, plays the piano. She's unbelievable. This is a Gospel Train, T-R-A-N-E. Yeah, she's unreal. And so, like, after in 65, she joined John Coltrane's quintet, replacing McCoy fucking Tyner.
One of your favorite pianists. That's your pianist.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, again, it wasn't nepotism or anything. John Coltrane isn't crazy. He's not going to just put somebody in there because he likes them. You have to be amazing, you know? And she filled in. I mean, stepped in, filled his shoes, which are big fucking shoes to fill.
She's perfect.
It's unbelievable. She's unreal. And then, of course, John Coltrane died in 67, 2 years later. So it's very short-lived. But, I mean, Jesus Christ, she's...
In that short period of time, they had Ravi. What, Ravi is also a saxophonist? Or is he... He's a pianist, like his mom.
You know, he plays, like... Gee, I think he plays, like, everything. Like, yeah, the sax,
yeah.
I think, is mainly... he might even play, like, the bassoon. You know, the whole the family's just on another level, you know. They have another son.
Unimportant Coltrane. His name is Unimportant Coltrane. No. Underachiever Coltrane.
But yeah, Ravi was 2 years old when Coltrane died. But I mean, the whole family is just. But and that's the thing. Like Alice Coltrane is more than just John Coltrane's wife.
Oh yeah, no, she's always an entity,
her own. So. Yeah, unbelievable, unbelievable. Yes. So,
well, I'm glad you played this track.
It's about time.
It's kind of warming me up because I came with zero.
Okay. Well, all the listeners came with zero too, so I guess we're all on the same page.
What? Well, let's get into.
That being said, please contact us at mostlymusicpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave comments, questions, observations, of course, on the Podomatic website, Mostly Music, or of course iTunes.
Suggestions, requests.
However you get to us, however we get to you. Yes, please.
Arguments.
Exactly.
Insults. Complaints, compliments. Insults.
Sure. Sure. Do it. And we should.
Bra size.
I guess we got to get like a Twitter thing going, I guess. I don't know.
Bra size.
Why not?
Very important.
Specs. Sure. Whatever. Yeah. Dick size, even. I don't. You know, it's fine. It's fine. I don't mind it. Just so we're all on the same page and we know what you want. So, anyway.
Speaking of jazz and fucking true musicians, because, I mean, the topic I wanted, it was just the one cut. It's like the phrase that I've been hearing lately is, you know, musicians that can lay it down the first time or once through. Because I don't hear, like, hearing this fluid piano playing by Alice, I don't hear any editing. I don't hear any production.
Yeah, I mean,
just recording. Yeah,
all those.
Which is production, but.
Well, it's just if one person fucks up, you gotta start all over. There's no, like, overdubbing. Like, they're not. It's all. You gotta get it in the take, you know? I'm assuming.
I mean, how rare is that to have someone that can just play something just perfect?
No, yeah, that's super rare.
Like, live. Well, when Palafox gifted me with a concert ticket to my first show at the SF Jazz Center.
That's right.
To see Maceo Parker playing funk.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Saxophonist extraordinaire.
Dude.
Played with James Brown and George Clinton. I mean, he's his own master, of course. But, you know.
Yeah. No, I was
blown. Unbelievable roots.
Standing 5 feet away from the stage, so close,
front
in
row.
There.
Oh, yeah.
Literally seeing the facial expressions on every band member, the relationship between the band members and their instruments. And what I wanted to ask was, like, did you see when Maceo was struggling with his saxophone?
Yeah, like, it yes. Yeah, oh yeah, he was having a very heated relationship with that sax
exactly.
That night. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. It's
And well, not in a bad way, you know. It wasn't it wasn't like he was missing notes or squeaking. Nothing near there. He was hearing
he's an
or
MC.
Feeling
he's a showman
that wasn't absolutely perfect. Something that was probably that went unheard to the audience. But there was
but
something going on. He was
yeah,
struggling.
No.
Yeah, he was doing something with that. He was fighting with it.
Exactly.
It was insane.
Like. I was picturing when I was watching this, I was picturing a young Maceo Parker, you know, making his instrument do what he needs it to do. He commands it. He enslaves it, mm-hmm. even, you know. Mm-hmm. But now as an aging guy, like mid-80s.
74.
Mid-70s.
Yeah.
He's, you know, lived. Now he has that symbiotic relationship of, you know, a little give and go of like, you know, is this thing going to do what I need it to do? Or mm-hmm. am I going to have to, like, you know, finesse yeah. it a little bit, and he was having this physical, yeah. just expressive, like almost an argument or
a battle,
a passion,
yeah.
like filled, like love spat
yeah, exactly.
with his fucking saxophone.
Yeah. yeah,
and he was like shaking it, looking. He was like, "Come on, come on!" And I was like, "Jesus!" Mm-hmm. I was like, "Fuck! I've never seen anything like that. It's fucking raw."
yeah.
You know, it's almost like the heroin addict guitarist that's yelling at his hands, you know, but he was doing this to his saxophone. Like, it's like, and this saxophone, you know, has been with him forever. Like, I noticed you see these bright, shiny gold saxes or silver saxes.
Mm-hmm.
This thing had patina on it.
Oh, yeah. It was weathered.
Yeah.
It's seen continents.
It's
been around for decades. Yeah.
Fuck, dude. Oh man, it's that whole him alone as a showman. He had the heels on the shiny shoes with
oh,
the
yeah.
blue
His,
suit.
Yeah.
Just fucking
Oh, he was immaculate
white
dressed.
Teeth.
Oh, he was great.
Big smile.
Occasionally, he'd throw on the sunglasses. He would do
impersonations of Ray.
Stevie Ray.
Oh, it's great.
But they were very subtle. He wasn't like overt. No. And if you caught it, he even played "You Don't Know Me." Sang it actually. He just him and the pianist. Nobody else.
That's
Everybody left the stage.
Fuck.
Him and the pianist played.
I forgot about that.
Ray Charles, unbelievable. Yeah. And it sounded so funny.
And they turned the lights moonlight purple blue. Fuck, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, I gotta. I wish I could relive that.
That was legit.
That was beautiful, man.
Yeah, yeah. He had a hot band. That's
well,
a,
I mean, like when you look to his right and you see his guitarist,
Bruno Spite or Spate.
I think it was Spitali.
Spitali.
He's a Spitali. No, yeah.
Well,
Spitali is
what.
Maceo was like,
him.
We need to do something with this man's name. He was clowning him, but Bruno was. He had this look on his face, like he was feeling music, and then he was like, "It was a response. It was like a call and response between him and Maceo and the rest of the band." And you could tell he can jam better than anybody.
Oh yeah, he was all over.
Yeah,
he was playing all. I mean, he was playing obviously like funk, but then like blues and jazz and like surf guitar riffs. Like he started tapping at one point. He started
double tapping.
He started literally tapping
up and down the neck,
like Eddie Van Halen. It was insane. He was just dropping picks and didn't matter. He would just play however.
He was being fucking experimental.
Yeah.
In a funk and jazz environment, I'm like,
yeah.
No, I don't think a lot of people got what was going on with that man and his guitar.
I hope they did, but yeah, you're right.
I don't think a lot of people got
it. We were mere feet from the man.
The band went down. Mm-hmm. And he had a guitar solo.
Yeah.
And he was doing explain it, because you can explain it better than me.
Well, yeah, so he was doing all kinds of crazy jazz chords, but then just holding them and going up and down, and then just picking random strings. And then he started tapping, which is, it's, if you've ever seen, like, heavy metal, you know, like, where you're shredding at, like, an incredible pace, but he had, like, no distortion on the amp. So it's, you hear every note, and he wasn't missing. It was
with
insane.
The volume control
on
his guitar.
Oh, that was insane. So, yeah, you know, 99 times out of 100, you see a guitarist play live. He's got about at least 6 pedals in front of him, effect pedals to distort or alter the sound of the guitar. He had none. Bruno had no pedals, and they weren't hidden because, I mean, we could touch the stage. We were right there.
Yeah.
None. All he had was his Fender Twin and the Fender Deluxe, or the DeVille, and that was it. And so I get, you know, he had natural reverb from the pedal from the amps, but because I was wondering, it's like, how was he getting like that weird wah / like tremolo sound?
Yeah,
he literally was cradling the volume
with his pinky
while playing. Going boom, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, nonstop, creating that effect just with his guitar with no effect pedal is unbelievable. I mean, it took me a while. Like, I've seen them a few times, and I always wondered, you know, because I would always see him, and I just figured there was some effect, but then this time we were so close, and I realized, holy shit,
it's all
dude,
him.
He's making that happen with one hand. You know, he's doing it all. Unbelievable. It was unreal. It was crazy.
There was so many different personalities on that stage backing up Maceo.
You said you saw Maceo yelling, reprimanding the drummer?
The drummer was the youngest guy on stage.
Pete McLean, yeah. Yeah.
He was very rigid.
Like, he was good.
He's good. He's a good drummer. I've seen a lot better.
He was good.
I think Maceo Parker is grooming him to be a permanent fixture in the band.
He's been with Maceo for the last 4 years that I've seen him.
Not long enough.
He's been there.
Because Maceo was like,
decades,
yeah,
maybe.
No. Yeah. He was giving him directions, like literally signaling the guy.
Like silent
stop,
direction.
Go, feel it, play it faster. Like
I like that the drummer kicked off his shoes midway through the first song and he just played barefoot like the entire set.
Probably because he can't feel it. That's why. Maceo was like, take off your shoes. You're not feeling this. I need you to feel this.
He was good. I don't want to sell him short.
He's fast. He was precise, but I could tell he was missing a lot of beats.
It's a
wasn't
funk
playing.
Show. It's
he
a funk show.
Yeah,
you
know. It's, you know.
He was there. He was there. He did what he needed to do.
When the pianist was like a really good pianist, but playing
legit.
His own thing.
He was legit.
He was playing his own thing.
He's incredible. That guy's like the silent backbone to that band because he fills in all those sounds, which usually, I mean, the bassist does, but the bass, it's a funk show, so they're almost like another guitar, you know.
Yeah,
he's just going up and down playing licks, but that, oh dude, the keys, yeah, he is great. What's his name? Will Bulware, Ballware, Will Bull. I don't know. Sounds weird. But they've been playing forever together. It's a tight sound. It's a tight sound.
How about the opening act?
Oh, Sugar Pie DeSanto.
Sugar Pie DeSanto.
Unbelievable. Oh, now that's a woman.
That's an 84-year-old woman who did a rolling backflip.
Literally.
While dancing.
Yes.
I'm like...
On stage, yes.
I was like,
she was dancing. She was hiking her skirt up. She was like yelling at the crowd. It was flirting with the men. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I was hoping she would flirt with me. I was like, I want a little of that. I want some of that sugar.
She was, it's always kind of a weird crowd there because it's an amazing venue. The San Francisco Jazz Center just mm-hmm. opened about 3 years ago. It's still the only freestanding building in the United States solely devoted to jazz. It's unbelievable. And when you think about like New York and New Orleans and all these historically great jazz cities, it's still the only one, which is crazy.
That's interesting. But, yeah. It's, when you told me that, it blew me away.
But, you know,
I was like, really? That makes sense to me.
It's in a part of town that used to be really hard. And
that's not the track.
It's right between Civic Center and the Fillmore and Western Edition Projects.
Yeah.
It's called Hayes Valley. If you live in San Francisco, you know, and you've seen the development over the last 10 years. It used to be like you don't walk there alone at night. Now it's like...
Now it's a jewel.
Yeah, now it's like Disneyland without the rides. It's insane. So, but the crowd at the Jazz Center is usually very sort of affluent, and it can feel stuffy.
It's middle class money.
But when you get like a funk show like that, and you get somebody like Sugar Pie DeSanto, who doesn't give a fuck. She's just stand up, everybody in the back can see you.
Commanding stand up, the room at full of middle aged, middle class white money.
And then everybody stood up. I'd never seen anybody command a crowd in that place like she did.
4'9", yeah,
diminutive,
maybe 80
tiny
pounds.
Woman. Yeah, maybe 90 pounds. Maybe 80 pounds. Yeah, tiny lady dancing around, but just controlling the room. Unbelievable. It was worth it just for her there.
Just for her. Yeah. I mean that's a piece of history.
Yeah, she toured with James Brown in the '60s, and she was
James Brown in the '60s.
Yeah, She's got some stories.
That's that bitch.
And she has all these like faded tattoos. You can kind of see like on her like shoulder and her arm. Like I was trying to see, but you know, she's moving so much. And like you said, she did a rolling backflip.
And she announced that, I mean, she's ill. She's not doing well.
That's right. She just got diagnosed.
With cancer, yeah.
Yeah.
But then she turned it into a party.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, this is the news, but we're still going.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep going.
If anything, that makes it that much more essential to it. Really get that party going. Unbelievable.
It was a good night.
That was a great show.
It was a good night. And that night, I gifted you a harmonica.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Did you play the harmonica?
It's right there. It's been a long time.
Have you mastered the harmonica?
No. I used to be not even proficient. I used to be passable. I could play. You know, so the C is not very forgiving.
I asked the guy, I was
the
like,
key.
I'm going to give my buddy a harmonica. What he's like, well, what does he want to play? I was like, I don't know. He's like, well, start him off with a blues harmonica.
Yeah, take this. It's what you think of when you think
of it. It came with a DVD
and
a manual.
The DVD is essential. I do need to watch that. I had a B flat before. That was great. Because that, you tune your guitar down like half a step, and then you sound like Neil Young.
Did you listen to that blues record? Or do you have a record player?
The Blues in St. Louis, 1929 to 1937. It's an incredible record.
It says when blues changed.
So you're trying to get me to master the harmonica so that you will then pick up these skills by osmosis? Because I know this is your dream.
My fantasy.
Your fantasy.
We're going to get into my fantasy now.
But your fantasy, what, is to be a master harpist?
No. So my entire life, I've always wanted to secretly be John Popper from Blues Traveler. Right. That guy plays the most amazing harmonica.
Well, but see, I got worried because I a few years back he lost like like 200 pounds in the course of like a couple months or something, which doesn't seem healthy. And it also left me wondering,
where did
A, is he even alive? But B, can he retain the pipes that it takes to really play a harmonica well? Because, you know, all
that, yeah, that's true.
Cotton or Sonny Boy Williams, these master harmonica players, right, from the old days, huge men, big dudes. John Popper, again, huge guy. Just it seems like there's something to that you need to be large in frame or stature.
It's true. It's true.
I don't know. So,
Fat Dan, Dead Cat Dan.
Dead Cat Dan. That's right.
He's big guy. Not as big as John Popper, but a big guy.
Few are, yes.
And he has a double chin.
Okay.
And we know Dan as being our resident sound box. He makes fucking amazing sounds.
Wait, like the guy from Police Academy?
Yeah. And it's that double chin that resonates a different kind of sound that accentuates sounds, and he can make like interesting things. And John Popper, when you hear him sing, you hear a little jiggle in that voice. And that's his double chin. I'm fucking telling you, bro.
Okay.
It's a thing.
I can't disprove that. It sounds right.
Imagine a big fat guy with a double chin. And I want you to listen to this track. I'm going to play Hook by Blues Traveler from their 1994 album 4.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to hear everything I'm talking about. His amazing harmonics and a harmonica and his amazing fucking double voice chin capability via double chin.
His natural resonator.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Here we go.
You're not wrong.
You hear that he does in his double chin.
Is that though?
It's that.
So he can't do that anymore. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
I
when's the last time he produced anything?
Well, again, you know, I don't know because I haven't really followed up on my Blues Traveler. I just remember I saw him and he's like thin but like weird, you know, like the weatherman guy.
Al Roker, right? Yeah.
When you lose like 200 pounds in a month, like, it's weird. And again, especially when you depend on the double chin reverb like you're talking about.
I can hear it.
Is it possible to retain that after you lose the weight? I don't know. We should know that. I hope somebody out
Let's
there
experiment
is
with
avid
with
blues
with Fat Cat Dan or Dead Cat Dan.
Dead Cat Dan. What do you want to have
make him? We'll
lose a lot.
We'll starve him.
maybe Christian Bale is playing. I just saw an interview with Christian Bale, and he's huge
for a movie. Yeah,
yeah, dude, like fat, like I didn't even know it was him, and he has like bleached eye. He looked really weird. So maybe he's playing the John Popper story. Hopefully,
well, let's listen to him get down on the harmonica.
This isn't the song for the harmonica, then.
It's. I know what you're thinking.
I'm not even hearing the harmonica
right now. Right here.
All right. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like 14 all over again.
Yeah. No, dude. Fucking love John Popper, man. He's gotten a lot of shit. He's a festival guy. You know?
I don't even know. He's a 90s festival guy.
He plays that bluegrass country, like blues, millennial white kids dance to it.
So you would really, if you could be any harmonicaist or harpist, whatever you want, you would be John Popper, not anybody else.
Nobody else.
James Cotton was always the one for always just slayed me.
Couldn't tell you.
Of course, Sonny Boy Williams, but I mean that he's been dead for a long time. Or even Paul Butterfield.
It's a different kind of harmonica sound. I mean, he's playing very staccato, blues traveler, high pitch. Yeah. It's a rock and roll harmonica.
It's sort of like bluegrass rock and roll or something. Yeah, it is.
Along the line, I'm like, we're talking about like Dave Matthews Band. He's like the same level as like
same
kind of demographic,
like, you know, festival music.
Exactly.
Thing,
huge,
right?
Like outdoor shit.
Although Dave Matthews, I'm sure, still sells out arenas.
Yeah. I'm sure Blues Traveler still fucking sells out, you know, Tennessee and shit like that.
You want to hear a little James Cotton just for...
let me hear some reference.
Perspective.
Yeah.
Southside Boogie.
You heard that double chin though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right, this is James Cotton.
Oh, yeah.
We all rock something. What I say? Can you have it now? Right now. Space now. Hey.
That's like back of the train car, highway blues.
I'm trying to remember. It's been a long time, but he shreds.
Yeah.
This is a master. Yeah, this is more like
John Popper's pop, like,
no, I know,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Rock and roll harmonica player, like with a blues overtone.
Yeah,
this is like traditional, like you know, like where the roots of the blues.
But there are some James Cotton tracks where he's just wailing. He's just going nuts.
He's a rock star.
I didn't come prepared. I apologize. This is still a great song.
It's fucking ridiculous. Yeah, I can visualize the landscape and the backdrop for this. You know what I mean? It comes with that.
Yeah, and it's
ingrained in us.
It's melodic. It's percussive. I mean, the harmonica for such a simple instrument it can be elevated to a very high element of any band. I mean, hell, you don't even need a band, really. You just a washboard and a harmonica and somebody who can sing, and fuck, dude, there you go. That's American roots right there, you know.
That's perfect.
John Popper, man. I wish we had a resident millennial to look up that. Although, I don't think anybody...
What he's doing,
like,
now.
Kids know.
I'm gonna wait. Well, I mean, I'm waiting because... This past couple, like since 2016 to like 2017, and I'm sure this year, there's been a lot of resurgence of artists, like of where the fuck did they go artists.
Okay. That's true. I guess that always happens.
Yeah. Slow Dive came out after 22 years with a perfect album, sounding amazing, you know?
Yeah, music is like clothing fashion, I guess. If you wait long enough, everything comes back into style, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
but I don't know. The 90s were very sort of esoteric. You know,
they were unforgiving to a lot of, like, not one-hit wonders, but one-album wonders.
Yeah.
Like, perfect example. You ever heard of a band called Neutral Milk Hotel?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah,
it's like old. The college rock or the college alt album ever.
I've heard that.
So yeah. They just came out with some new shit.
A new album?
Yeah. Well, what I want to play in retrospect is Neutral Milk Hotel's In the Airplane Over the Sea. The album King Carrot Time? Is that the name of the album? I don't remember.
I don't know. You're the expert.
What a beautiful face I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye and be gone from me. Soft and sweet, let me hold it close and keep it here with me. And one day we will die and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over the sea. But for now we are young, let us lay in the sun and count every beautiful thing we can see. Love to be in the arms of all I'm keeping here.
So, I mean, Palafox was just asking me if I had turned up the volume on.
Yeah, I apologize if you guys got blown out there.
So the interesting thing about this album is that when you listen to it, it's very offensive sound-wise.
Like it's rough, like it just, the recording.
It sounded like it was recorded raw at volume and just distributed that way. I don't know how to explain that.
Like it wasn't like mixed at all or anything.
I don't want to say that. It wasn't. I don't think it was mastered.
No compression.
There was no compression. No volume stabilization. None of that stuff.
Not unlike this podcast. So.
Yeah.
I guess it's fitting. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's just like when you hear it, there's. It's just going to be full blast. Like, so you have to pick the volume and leave it there and listen to the album the way it is. It was great. I mean, it defined a cult. It defined like the 90s angst college, you know, beginning of fucking liberal activism kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, oh, what do you listen to? Oh, I listen to, you know, Neutral Milk Hotel and fucking, you know, what? Mogwai and Godspeed You Black Emperor. You know, Radiohead's second album. Shit like that.
I was going to say, he actually sounds, what's his name? Jeff? Or what's his name? Jeff Mangum?
Yeah.
He sounds kind of like Molina. What's that guy that you love?
Jason Molina.
Jason Molina. Yeah. He kind of has like that mournful.
So Jason Molina has a very angelic voice, smoother,
but like sad.
It's very pathetic.
Like a very morose.
It's very pathetic.
Yeah, but you know, it's not always. I mean, for music, it works really.
And Jason
well.
Molina can hold a fucking note. Yeah, oh no, he holds notes.
Jeff Mangum sounds like he's doing all right.
He's doing great. I mean, he has an obscure voice. That's what I love about that kind of alt 90s music is that
so
indie.
You said they came out with a new album?
Well, he's I heard sampling of his. He's producing new stuff. Like, he's coming out with new stuff. I
mean, it's, solo or?
It is.
As
Neutral Milk Hotel. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's the big thing because everyone's like, what, how many, 20? 20 years later.
Right. Yeah, they started in the late 80s, early 90s, right?
No, it'd be 90s.
Yeah.
90s only, I think. Yeah, 94.
Or maybe 89 or 90.
94 to 97, I think. Mm-hmm. And they only had one album. That's it. 97, I want to say. 95. 1995. That's the year.
No, they had more albums.
They had EPs, not LPs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is their only full-length album. But I mean, what else? There's like, Morrissey came out with a new album recently.
That's right.
Bjork came out with a new album recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bjork's.
I've refused to listen to any of this music.
What was up with Bjork's album? There was something weird.
I don't know.
Whoops.
Like news about her being weird again?
Utopia, right? That's the name.
Yeah, Utopia. Oh, it's the cover. The cover, she's like, she has a vagina on her face.
Well, I mean, that's not abnormal. But
Coltrane came out with a documentary for Coltrane called Chasing Chasing Train.
Yeah, yeah. They come out with one of those every year. But this Bjork's new album is with Arca, A-R-C-A, who I didn't really know anything about. I guess his name is Alejandro Gersi.
Yeah.
Caracas-born, Brooklyn-based producer. I don't know. But you wanted to do something where we're sort of
just... first listen.
First time, yeah. And this would kind of be a good way to start. I haven't listened to Bjork's new album, Utopia, but if you'll indulge me, here's Arisen My Senses.
Instantly,
all I'm gonna do tonight is listen to this album.
As soon as you hear the first note of her voice, because you hear the first sounds of like weird like sea life or something, you know, like some weird bird, and that lays the foundation of the track. And then she comes in with her voice and the melodies, and you instantly feel vulnerable. Instantly, you get transported back. When you're an over emotional 19 to 23 year old,
right,
heartbroken, in and out of love,
God, she's good,
desperate for connection, and Bjork's the soundtrack to that.
She does have that. It's sort of like this
ethereal,
ethereal longing in her
voice,
like the soul searching for something, but doesn't care if she doesn't get it. You know, it's like
I have a quote.
Unreal. I don't know how she conveys that.
Made for a shirt.
Yeah.
Her void fills yours. Yeah, she's expressing this like a simultaneously full yet hollow center, and it just reflects you, dude. I'm getting overly poetic with this shit.
Well, no, but that's she imbues that in you. Yeah. Like that's her power.
She's my muse. She's always been my muse.
She has. I just love how complete her vision is, you know, whether you like it or not. She released a statement the official Utopia videos came out. She says, "I would like to introduce the first four videos of Utopia in the chronological order. I always felt this was a bit of a triptych, and now the first episode is done. I can't wait to start the new year with fresh flavors. Happy winter solstice." Because she knows that January 1st is an arbitrary date. It means nothing. That's not the beginning of a new year. Winter solstice is the real new year. And she wrote that on December 20th. I don't know. I just love that. That's just great. Because, I mean, the whole January 1st, it means nothing. But that's great.
Reassuring.
I just love that she has this vision for the videos being...
Yeah. It's...
Like, all one, but sort of, you know,
Yeah.
She's like Hirano's Bosch or something. Oh,
man. It's reassuring to me that we have her. She's a gift.
She's a gift.
You know? But it's scary at the same time because there's only a few of her. Or like
there's nobody else.
There's only a few artists like her.
Yeah.
Where it like they hold together your generation, the current generation, and the future generation via music.
She does seem like she could seamlessly go into the future, and she's not gonna have a problem.
No,
it's unbelievable.
She's a soundtrack to like time travel, but it's scary because if we lose her, it's like losing a foundation of our like society based on art and music and expression. Just like we've lost like fucking Bowie and.
Ooh, 17 was a dark year.
Fuck.
17 was a bad year for that. Yeah, fuck 2017.
Prince. Dude. When we lost Michael.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Michael was a while ago.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you know, when you start slowly losing those artists, like, Bjork's going to be around for a while, you know?
No, it's true. Actually, speaking of that, you know, today, I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, but today is January 1st. Do you know what happened exactly 65 years ago today?
What's that? Earth was created?
No, Hank Williams died.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Play some Hank. Play some Hank for the fade out. I got to take an emotional break.
But, you know, just saying. It's...
Oh, man.
I mean, it's weird.
And then there was like, you know, it's kids, you know, and... the music that came out of them, and it like perverted like the fucking like the worst parts of Hank's like demons.
And 19 years ago today, Townes Van Zandt died.
Yeah.
So you have two of arguably the greatest country voices of all time, right? Happened to die on January 1st. Obviously, decades apart, but still
complications from drinking was Hank, right?
It was pills and alcohol. I mean, he was a professional alcoholic, but he was also taking a lot of pills. Yeah. He was 29 years old, you know. I mean,
ludes,
unbelievable. He was on his way to a show, yeah, famously.
Hank,
he couldn't even walk. He had so much back pain,
fuck.
So he just, you know, was taking pills. And if he didn't drink, he would hurt even more. So he drinks, but he would still perform, man. He would still go and perform. And he wasn't making any money because he got banned from the Grand Ole Opry. And he was waiting, I mean, to the day he died, really, for them to accept him. And they didn't for a long time. A long time.
Their
That's
loss.
Why Johnny Cash, like, refused to play for a long time. That's why he's like that picture of him flipping off. You
yeah.
know? It's so good. But, okay.
Their loss. Fuck them.
Yeah. And, you know, to say Hank Williams and Townes are, I think, two of the best. Of course, we lost Merle Haggard as well, which is, you know, I don't.
But he was widely accepted.
Not to leave Merle Haggard out, but it's true. But
Merle,
you know,
Haggard was widely accepted.
But you know what also happened on this day in 1959? Johnny Cash played the famous San Quentin show.
Oh, yeah.
And guess who was in that audience serving a 15-year sentence?
Me?
Merle fucking Haggard.
Merle Haggard, yeah. For what?
Yeah.
Murder? Shot a man in Reno? What did he do?
No, but so he was, you know, who knows? He was always in and out, but he was there, man. It's insane. And so he only ended up serving 3 years of that 15-year sentence, but still
snitched.
And it's not that no. God, no, fuck you. No. Merle was in there for Grand Theft Auto and armed robbery.
Yeah, my kind of guy.
He was, you know, he was poor. He was an Okie from Muskogee, you know, give him a break. You
know? An Okie from Muskogee.
So he sees Johnny Cash, right? He's in prison. I'm sure he didn't just, like, you know, snap and be like, ooh, I'm gonna, you know, do that, but he always had it.
It was in him.
It was already in him. It's, and an so eight. I'm sure it's nice to see, like, oh, fuck, like, here's this guy. He's playing for us. He doesn't need to be here. It's New Year's Day. Like,
yeah.
What's he doing here? And Johnny Cash was in prison, of course, and so, well, you know, jail. I don't know if he was ever in prison, but I don't know. You know, it must be kind of inspiring, especially if you're Merle. And then, of course, Merle gets out, and he fucking kills it, man. You know, he's Merle.
Well, I mean, higher, speaking of innate, like, artists that they find their muse, they get inspired, whatever the situation or the scenario is, and they just become what they're supposed to be. Like, they, mm-hmm. The floodgates open. My favorite example, Ray LaMontagne. Is his Trouble album 2003, 2004, when that came out, changed shit. He was nobody, nothing. Inspired by on his way to his fucking menial warehouse job at a fucking shoelace boot factory or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears a Stephen Stills song on the fucking radio and he's like, you know what? I'm going to be a fucking, I'm going to do this.
Stephen Stills, is that what it was? That's good. All right, well, I'll take it.
If you listen to the Trouble album in its entirety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Jolene. Have you heard Jolene?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What's your favorite track on that album? Trouble, Hannah, Jolene? Can I play?
We're going to fade out with a little Hank Williams.
Give me some Hank. I'll take some Hank.
Yeah. There's no competition there. Okay.
Play something like everyone's going to like. Do it for the masses. I know you.
Every song Hank Williams wrote.
Do it for the masses because I know you.
He had like 30.
I know. No, he had 30.
It's unbelievable.
But you're going to play something obscure to accentuate yourself. Just play something for the masses so everyone can dig it.
We will take a quick break. This is I'm a Long Gone Daddy by Hank Williams.
Good one.
All you wanna do is sit around and pout, and now I got enough and so I'm getting out. I'm leaving now. When I get a kiss, I think that something's wrong. I'm leaving now. I'm leaving now. I'm a long gone daddy. I don't need you anyhow. I'll go find a gal that wants to treat me right. You go get yourself a man that wants to fight. I'm leaving now. I'm leaving now. I'm a long gone. Don't go saying I'm leaving you, or thinking I never got close enough to stay. Time runs in and then runs out, starts again and it's always been that way. You're gonna drown tomorrow if you cry too many tears for yesterday. Tomorrow's half of all you got. Treat him good, 'cause when I'm gone, he'll stay. Well, I won't be forgetting you, and you won't be forgetting me, I know. If memory comes a summer cloud, and rains of sweetness down below. Well, I'll see you like you look right now. Maybe wonder why I had to go.
God damn it.
Heaven is.
Fuck you.
Towns kills me.
Dude. Wow.
He's too good. We're back. This is Towns Van Zandt. Only him or me. Usually we try to come back on a. It's not that this is like a downer. It's not. It's just incredibly soulful.
Perfect.
Everybody knows that, but you know, yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
God, he's good.
Yeah, this is a low spark in the twilight of his life, reflecting, whittling on the riverside, the cabin, thinking back on his life, and like. I fucked up. Then I die.
Drinking whiskey from the bottle.
Not even whiskey, dude.
Two Cokes a day and
not
no
even
food.
Whiskey. Yeah. I've been on water for 10 years. I learned.
Yeah, but that's not the town's way.
No. God, he's drank himself to death.
I wanted to play the Tower song, but I honestly, I couldn't. I couldn't. That song kills me. That song kills
me. That's fucking bullshit.
This song kills me, but, you know.
Because when you were queuing it up, you said when I hear that note, and you stopped.
I mean, literally the first note to the Tower song, just I'm done.
It's just, I got to hear this song.
So good, dude, it's so good.
I have to hear this song.
We're trying to pivot.
Okay, okay. I'll give you that.
I just wanted to honor Towns and, you know, the anniversary of his death. I guess that's kind of morbid, and I guess you should honor them on their birthday. I don't know. Birthday seems kind of...
No, death is better.
Because birthday is, yeah, it's...
Because birthday, they were born into nothing. Death, they left a legacy. So,
right.
What are you going to honor?
Yeah, death
nothing
is
or legacy?
Seemingly more powerful, I think. Yeah, that's true. You know, anyway.
You're going to shoot me that track later. I'll hear it on the way home.
Yeah, sorry. This is from Delta Mama Blues, the album. It's the name of the album. Fucking great album. If you don't have any Towns Van Zandt albums, just go at least buy one or just listen to it, please. Stream it, loot it, steal it, burn it. I don't know. I don't know what the kids do. Just listen to it, please. Do yourself a favor. Anyway.
Yeah, it's your loss if you don't. So
Hank Williams, I'm assuming everybody knows Hank Williams, but Towns Van Zandt somehow still gets sort of lost in the ether. I mean, all musicians know him and revere him, but it seems like because he never played any big stages. He never really cared. You know, he was pretty simplistic in his endeavors. And I mean, he would go, you know, record a record and then carry like 400 copies of the record in a knapsack and just travel around the country. You know, it's insane. And that's why it was so hard to get any of his records for such a long time, because there were a finite amount of them, you know. I mean, that's one good thing, I guess, about, you know, the digital age and everything streaming, is that things that would have been gone forever are, you know, still out there. You know, I was actually listening to Karen Dalton earlier tonight, and I hadn't listened to her in a long time. And that's another artist who, you know, she recorded like one album, maybe, you know, and probably would have been lost to time. But
genre?
Like folk. But, you know, if anything, like real folk, because, I mean, she came from that. And she kind of had like a... Are you familiar with Karen Dalton? She kind of had
names kind of ringing a bell, but
you know, 60s and but okay. She was historically sort of like a muse for a lot of.
Was
lot
she
of
a
people.
Part of a group at some point?
No. She, I mean, she was kind of just a vagabond. I mean, you know, a lot of people came to New York and Greenwich Village in the early 60s to be like a folk singer, to emulate things that they've heard, but you know, Karen Dalton, that's just what she was, you know. And she has that really, that different phrasing of notes, not unlike Billie Holiday. I mean, they're nothing alike, obviously, but they are in that sort of, like, she couldn't sing any other way, you know. And she had a, I don't know, sort of grace about her.
Do you have that for me queued up?
Yeah, you want to listen to
just, I mean, we're fucking, I'm intrigued, so.
Yeah, all right. This is.
Let's see if I recognize her voice.
It hurts me too.
Baby, ain't gonna lie. Without you, darling, I can't be satisfied. If things are going wrong for you, you know it hurts me too. Thank you. put your hand in mine. I've got something to tell you, darling. I want to change your mind. If things are going wrong for you, you know it hurts me too.
I mean, my first response, while we were mic down, I asked, is she black?
No, you're just like, oh, she's black.
Yeah.
You just assumed.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, she's
not. No, wow. I mean, that's just the epitome of, like, deep, soulful.
But there's some, yeah, there's some Billie Holiday kind of in there, right? Like, not like a trained singer, but very expressive and very unique.
You know, maybe that was the correlation I made in my head was just that, oh, Billie Holiday. And,
yeah, she, you know, hung out with like Dylan a lot. I mean, so Richard Manuel from the band supposedly had a, you know, on and off relationship with her. But there's the song Katie's Been Gone, which is it's from the Basement Tapes, but it's also on the extended version of Music from Big Pink, their first album. It's a great song. It's about her. And, oh, man, she was, yeah, just sort of this, you know, I don't even know, man, just this
unattainable
muse. Yeah, that sort of came just in and out of everybody's lives. And
a wisp in the wind.
Yeah.
One of those fluttering.
A diamond in the rough, you know, yeah. A
butterfly that just goes from flower to flower.
Yeah, you know, there were people that.
I hate those kind of bitches.
Jesus Christ.
They, you know what I do when they come around? I look the other way.
Well, it's because it's too much.
Yeah,
I
don't want to die.
They will end you. Yeah.
I've decided I want to live to old age, and they will kill you. I mean, Emmy Lou killed fucking Graham Parsons. I'll swear by that.
Hey,
to the day I die.
You know what? That's
it was too good.
That's a worthy death.
It was too good.
I would die for Emmy.
We've said this like twice every episode. We know this. This is a fact.
Emmy, I know you're listening. Come to San Francisco, please.
Oh, she will. She comes a few times a year.
She does. She comes at least once a year. That's true. I know.
Let's go.
I know.
Her next show.
I saw her last year. Yeah. I know. God, yeah.
I'm just going to stand there stoically, dressed in black, arms crossed, looking at her, no expression, and then she'll look at you. That's the move. Every guy knows that's the
Emmy's
move.
Emmy's been around. She's not going to be swayed by
Don't. You got to pull that Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
Be the man in black standing in a wave of a crowd of buffoons.
No, see, Johnny Cash never phased her, man. She like...
No, I'm saying. I'm just saying that look, that stern. Uh-huh. Like, what are you going to, a funeral? No expression. Surrounded by literally a tidal wave of buffoonery. And you're that one guy. You're looking dead in the eye.
I think anything I can think of...
Dude, that's the move. I just gave you Emmy Lou.
She's been around a lot longer.
No, that's the move. Come on.
She's got the moves. I'm just here. Well, just come ruin me, Emmy, please.
Shit. Fuck, dude.
But anyway, technology is good for you know, a lot of things. Like,
I have a different soundtrack to come ruin
keeping
me.
Keeping obscure things alive, yes.
It's like kind of feeds into my manic depressive personalities. You got Bjork on one hand,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and Courtney Love on the other.
What? No, Glassjaw.
Glassjaw, okay.
Glassjaw just came out with a new album. I didn't know this.
Mm-hmm.
It just dropped.
Have you listened to this new album?
No. This is now the segment of first listens.
Okay, we're doing that. Yeah. Okay.
So what? Last album came out fucking 15 years ago. I was 19. Yeah. They were doing their tour for Worship and Tribute album. Amazing fucking album. Just kills me, dude. It's fucking intense. Real.
Early 2000s.
Yeah. 2001, 2002.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I saw them multiple times touring. Different. So many fucking adventures watching this band. Did I tell you the adventure of like watching Star Wars with the half the band of fucking Glassjaw? Anyways. Getting stuck in Modesto.
The first Star Wars reboots in the early 2000s.
Yeah. No, it was episode
whatever the fuck, I don't
two.
Know.
Anyways, that's a stupid story.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, so there's, you know, the softer side, the more melodic side. There's Bjork, and then there's hardcore, like raw expression, glass jaw, New York fucking screamo, you know, at the same time, like just a street attitude with a very rock and roll kind of pop feel. And they just came out with a new album called Material Control.
Okay.
And let's just play the opening track. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This is New White Extremity. I mean, that's Daryl Palumbo, lead singer. I mean,
I would have expected
very fucking angry, but meaningful dude. I've seen him go on rants. You know,
you've seen him live.
Yeah, multiple times.
Right. Okay.
He's a personally, I don't like him, but artistically, he's fucking great.
Yeah, you
know, he's a little guy, small stature, almost like a fucking. He looks sickly.
Oh, he's skinny and small. He's not.
Not just that, but he's something about him. You could tell. I think he has actually like a autoimmune disorder,
like Ringo Starr disease or whatever.
He has an autoimmune disorder or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
He suffers from some kind of thing,
but he's got pipes.
He's got pipes, dude. The dude can fucking scream.
Yeah.
His the album that really changed my perspective on. Fluid genres of hardcore, screamo, rock and roll, punk, all that good stuff. Like was Glassjaw. I was 19 when I first saw them live.
Do you remember where?
Yeah, dude, The Pound, SF.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Nope. The Pound was fucking dark, dingy, grimy, perfect. It was essentially an abandoned SPCA.
In the Soma?
No, this was
Potrero Hill.
No, behind that. This was off just it was off of 3rd Street on Cargo Way, near the post office. Christ. It shared the shoreline of the post office, and it was literally like a parking lot away from the water. And at the end of this long fucking 4-lane road, like barely maintained. And I've seen some great shows there, like a lot of punk and stuff like that, like Misfits cover bands, things like that. And unfortunately, the owner of the venue decided to start throwing fucking illegal boxing matches, and he shut his ass down. Like
that when Fight Club came out, and he got excited.
No, he just had unsanctioned like real boxing matches with refs and stuff. But you know, it was unsanctioned, so that's not legal within city limits.
Right.
But they shut that down. But that venue was amazing. Anyway, that's why I saw Glassjaw for the first time. And yeah, I mean, that album, Worship and Tribute, dude, if you haven't heard that from front to back, you're a fucking asshole.
Yeah. This makes me think of Norma Jean. Do you remember that?
Norma Jean? No, that's see, the thing is, Glassjaw has do I want to say street cred? They have street cred.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they had one huge music video for an album that came out after Worship and Tribute, and it was Vincent Gallo was on the fucking music video, and that guy's a fucking art piece.
When he was relevant, yeah.
Yeah, he's a living art piece. That guy's a fucking weirdo, and he was on the music video. I mean, who gets Vincent Gallo on a music video? He only does what he wants to do. I remember he did a fucking news a magazine interview, and he interviewed himself, and all he talked about was how he caught the clap from some chick.
Chloe 70.
Something like that. All right, that's what I mean. That's like the world that they live in.
Well, yeah, he's not even in the real world.
You know? No, he's a surreal guy.
Yeah.
But anyways, have you heard Worship and Tribute?
Yeah. It's been a long time. That's why I'm thinking about all the, like, Poison the Well and Norma
Poison
Jean.
The Well.
Yeah, dude.
I told you about that show,
time,
right?
Man.
I saw.
It's making me think of.
Same night.
My youth. Yeah.
Same night. My first night I saw The Last Jaw Live. Poison the Well. Poison the Well, followed by Dredge, followed by Glass Jaw.
That's a good show. They'll blast you out.
I just found the next 4 years of my life. It was like I was in college for music. Yeah,
that's good shit.
It was great.
Yeah,
it was great. Unfortunately, it was accompanied by fucking groupies and weirdos.
Well, that was the territory.
Yeah, that's how life is. Who else came out with Morrissey?
Yeah,
Morrissey came out with a fucking new album. It dropped what, a month ago?
Yeah, what's the name of that Morrissey album?
I haven't heard it. I intentionally didn't listen to it because I wanted to do first lesson segment. It's called something in school, high school. I'm gonna pull it up right now. Low in High School.
That's what his new album's called?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I guess he's trying to remarket to like young kids. Maybe he's becoming commercial. I don't know. Maybe I don't like Morrissey anymore. Let's find out. You want to do a first listen to this guy?
Yeah.
All right. First track on Low in High School album, My Love, I'd Do Anything for You. That's pretty straightforward.
I'm ready.
I love Morrissey. He literally can do no wrong.
Right.
His political views, his shitty interviews, his fucking bad attitude, his constant flakiness to show up to a fucking concert. He does no wrong. This track at first sounded like a rehash of old shit. But then it just, the track evolves. I'm really excited to listen to the rest of the album.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, Pitchfork, who's, you know, always very, pretty critical, but whatever, and I don't know why they
ruthless.
We've deemed them the authority. I don't know, maybe they're not. But they said, though the music is often engaging and exciting, Low in High School is Morrissey's second consecutive release that feels regrettably tethered to his increasingly alienating public persona. Which, and they rated it a 5.7, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. No. I mean, that's Morrissey being Morrissey. So,
yeah.
And if you're a Morrissey fan, then this is just, this is great. It's fine. You know, it's.
I'm reading it.
Is he going to win over any new fans? I don't know.
This is weird. This is weird.
But so, does he need to? No.
The constant looming thing that he wants people to forget about is his, the whole bout with his like public endorsement of sexuality. What I seriously, what I read into, because I know Morrissey, like, it's right. My lullaby music since I was a fucking little kid. Mm-hmm. What I read into it was this first track, big album.
Right.
All this political climate, sexual climate, fucking
Brexit.
Leftist, rightist, all that shit.
Sure.
Who he is, where he came from, what he grew up as, his public persona in the fucking media. First track, literally, he's speaking to someone. Because what's my quote? Remember my quote when I was like, well, what's Morrissey to me?
You
I was
like,
well, I do have a lot of quotes. Well, what I said was that, you know, the Smiths, everyone loved. It was accepted because he was singing to you, for you.
Oh, right. Yes.
But when he became Morrissey, it became more about himself. He was singing about himself, for himself, expressing himself. And literally, My Love, I'd Do Anything For You, as an opening track to this new album of his, and like the climate now. Yeah. It's, there's, I see someone, I can almost literally visualize this specific person that he's talking to.
Mm-hmm.
It's his lover. And he's like, listen, do you want me to come out and state to everyone what it is that I am? But here's the album. So I got to hear the rest of it.
I like the cover. The cover is a little kid holding an axe. And he's holding a sign in the other hand that says, Axe the Monarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck the monarchy. Let's get rid of that shit. It's antiquated garbage bullshit. Let's get rid of it. It's not fun to look at. It's not fun to watch. It's not fun to rehash imperialism. No, fuck them. Yeah, axe the monarchy. Let's get rid of it. There you go, Morrissey. You know what? Thumbs up. Thumbs up for you, Morrissey.
I like it.
I like it. I like it.
I really want to see, like, I'm going to listen to this album before I go to bed tonight.
Like, you know, it's very Morrissey. But
yeah.
Again.
But he's making, I hear the statement he's making to this person. He's like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'll do it right. Doing it on this track.
I hope you're right. I hope it's more about love than it is about, like, politics and shit. You know, I know in politics.
He has strong statements for sure. Yeah. And, you know, he's so smart he's and British. He's so poetic. It's layered. So it's literally something for almost every person that wants to hear what they want to hear from it.
So I'm actually curious because this is, you are Mexican or,
You
know, so, but, and there's a huge
quarter Mexican.
Okay. Whatever. There's a huge Mexican, fan base for Morrissey.
Morrissey's huge number one fan base is straight Hispanic males.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I need to clarify, not gay Hispanic males, but straight
Hispanic
hard. Males, and if you go to a Morrissey show, especially like in LA, like it is turned out with like thugged out cholo dudes. Like
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
What's my,
I mean, I love it. It's great. I'm curious what's, you know, what the origin of that is. If you even know, I don't know.
I can tell you from my own perspective, but from my own standpoint is, I mean, what's my one fucking niche in like dating and love and life? I have an equal balance of masculinity and femininity.
Okay.
And Morrissey represents that.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I listen to Morrissey.
Yeah, but I'm talking like, you know,
Morrissey,
you
like, know what, it's the, you know, epitome.
Like,
it's
like hard Mexican dummies from, you know, East LA are going to this show. You know what I mean? Like, not sensitive San Francisco Mexican dudes like you. No. Okay, I'm talking like, it's, and you know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's like you see, like when you see, when you, I went to, what is it called? Guns N' Roses show. I see white people, and I see Mexicans. Yeah, it's their way of Americanizing.
That's just...
It's a Mexican community. Yeah, it's like first generation after their immigrant parents born in America, or like...
80s, yeah.
First generation in America to be Americanized. It's their way of becoming one with the culture.
But Morrissey was never...
He's counterculture.
First of all, Morrissey isn't American.
He's counterculture, but where do those kids...
He was never popular here.
Where do kids that don't fit in...
Like, mainstream.
Where do kids that don't fit in...
Punk rock.
Yeah, they go to the counterculture.
Punk.
And that's Morrissey.
Yeah.
Morrissey is an effeminate counterculture.
Or rap.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's rap. But it used to be punk and hip-hop, but now it's pretty much just hip-hop. But no, yeah. It's you don't find that curious at all, though? Like, this very
I just defined it
feminine. It's still a little vague. It's still
they fit in. It's obscure, like Hell's Angels.
Huge Chinese population that it's into them, or a huge Indian or black population, you know what I mean? Like, you know, come on. I don't know.
Because they're the majority.
It's curious.
Hispanics are majority.
I'm saying,
population.
It's great. I think it's awesome. But it's just, you know, I've always wondered. I just
defined it.
I'm going to defer to the audience.
Re-listen to the episode and you'll hear my answer.
There is another artist that starts with the letter M that came out with a new album recently as well. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Santana?
Miguel.
Oh, you say S or M? What did you say?
M. M. Morrissey, you know, M. Miguel.
Oh,
M.
Oh.
War and Leisure. This, you know, look, Miguel's always been great for not straying. You know, he doesn't stray. He doesn't go political. He doesn't go. He doesn't try to. You know, he's very sensual, right? He's the only guy that can make a song called "Pussy Is Mine." Actually, kind of nice, you know, and not crass somehow. You know, he can do that. This album is a little, you know, it's, I think it's him sort of dipping his toe into maybe, the body politic. Sort of the mainstream political views right now.
Oh,
you know?
Good. Everyone's got an opinion. Right.
And I'm not, like, I don't want to, you know, paint him like that. Like he's doing, he's not a political album at all. And I mean, it is called War and Leisure, and he is the king of the leisure. He's been very consistent. And a lot of people can look, or critics can look at that and say, well, it's.
You want to listen to Luke Bryan's album? Just came out.
Fuck off.
Play Miguel. I'll hear it.
You play Little Miguel?
Yeah, do that.
So again, he's got a song called Harem. Okay, well, yeah.
All right, let's do that.
You want to do that one? All right. Here we go. Miguel from the new album, War and Leisure. This is Harem.
Do you like pretty things, pretty places, pretty big? Every night, dreamy scenes float away, away with us. Love and trust is what you see. Exquisite minds, satisfied. Make a choice, make it fast. Lightning never strikes twice like a heartbreak.
Legit.
This is perfect.
It's great
that you play this. I've been wanting to fucking express my distaste for the wall of noise that's coming out right now for the past year and a half, 2 years. This track literally just like, okay, all right. It has the same kind of like production value, overtones, sounds, like the familiar sounds we have, but it's not your typical shit that you're hearing, you know?
Yeah, it's not super bass heavy and
the top 40 muck that's coming out, yeah. You know?
No. And this is
it's
new.
Good.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's along the lines of what Family Jewels played with fucking
Frank Ocean.
Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's
you
not
know, from the Stony album, when we heard Post Malone's acoustic final track.
I would take this over Post Malone.
Of course. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, the obscurity of it amongst all the noise. It's refreshing.
It's true. It's original. And it's very Miguel, which is nice.
I had we just had our New Year's Eve party the last night at the bar, and I had to make a playlist, and it took me hours to figure out, okay, weighing, like, what do I play for these fucking people? It's a mixed crowd, so I have to satisfy everybody. So I was like, oh, let me do decade by decade till now.
It's a good idea.
It's not a new idea. It's typical shit that people do, but
not really. Well, I don't know.
I started in the 50s, you know, rock and roll, pop rock, stuff like that. And then I ended with trap music and EDM stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know what EDM, I mean? Wow.
But trap music and EDM,
yeah,
like trap combo stuff.
Yeah.
And we can get into new music.
Hey, I like Migos, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll, you know.
Migos is
it's
fire,
catchy.
Bro.
It's catchy.
But I started with a Chuck Berry track. Everyone knows this track because of Pulp Fiction.
My Ding-a-ling.
No, his only number one hit.
You will win pub trivia one day. Yeah. Chuck Berry's only number one hit.
My Ding-a-ling.
My Ding-a-ling.
I knew that.
There you go. It's not Chuck.
You Never Can Tell. Remember
that
track?
Yeah, okay.
Well, let's give like a little dose of that, and I'm going to show you what that compared to the end of the night.
Okay.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room Robux sale. The coolerator was crammed with TV dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They had a hi-fi phone, oh boy, did they let it blast. 700 little records, all rock, rhythm, and jazz. But when the sun went down, the rapid tempo of the music fell. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They bought a souped-up chitney.
Well, I mean,
oh my god, yeah.
Instantly, I start duck walking in
place.
I'm
doing the twist over here, Travolta style.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I mean, I got my shoes
back
off.
Back then, that was pop music.
Oh, that's good.
That's rock and roll. That's Chuck Berry. He's a big hit.
Yeah.
You know? That was my turmoil. As I'm sitting there and I'm going through the decades.
Oh, people weren't digging this?
No, they fucking instantly. Everyone loves it.
Good.
Everyone.
Good.
And they're like, oh shit. And everyone, like the young kids refer to Pulp Fiction and the upbeat sound, and the old folks are
Jack
like,
Rabbit Slim.
This is our shit.
Yeah.
You know? But that was my turmoil. I was going through the decades and I was picking fairly relevant, you know, pop yet artsy, obscure, upbeat dance stuff that everyone can get
down to.
Trying
to change it up from the usual.
Yeah, yeah. So I started with Chuck Berry.
Appreciate that.
It goes to go, you never can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started getting a little more dismal because as I got to the later 2000s, between 2013 and now, the shit started sounding fucking repetitive.
Bleeding into the same.
Everything. The same beat, the same hook, the same fucking... the same material, the same
the clapping hands and the beat,
yeah,
and
but
all
like
that shit.
Like the subject matter, all the same shit, And I mean, what's the hottest, the two hottest songs right now that I can literally find? A female artist and a male artist. I have the female artist, Cardi B. Mm-hmm. You know who Cardi B is?
Sure.
She's a, that I think she's Puerto Rican or something, but she's a stripper.
Stripper, yeah.
And she got enough notoriety and fame that she, I guess, started thinking that she can rap. It's not bad. It's pop. It fits in.
Okay.
It's a part of the hum. And it's essentially, it's almost like, I don't even want to say it because we're going to get a lot of hate. It's blaxploitation, man. It's becoming that. It's their expression. I get it. But at the same time, it's like, you're just doing it because you found the angle and now you're going to make money.
Mm.
So you're exploiting yourself. You know what I mean? Oh, I get it. You had a struggle. You're a stripper. Oh, well, you pay your mama's bills. That's on the track. I'm not just saying that because I'm being fucking weird.
Sure.
No, that's on the track. And I get it. You're giving your sob story. You're giving your struggle. And now you're a hip-hop artist and you can make money. But you're doing it in a...
Oh, well, hold on. So, but the story is fine because that's the
it's
story.
A true story.
That's been the story for...
Since it's everyone's immemorial fucking story sure. now. In that
but
genre.
The song is you're saying the music itself is garbage. I can't even think of it off the top of my head, so I don't know. Once you
should I have to find it? It's called Bodak Yellow, Cardi B.
What is it?
I'm gonna play
what that means. Okay,
I don't even know what the fuck that means.
It's good. Fuck with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both, I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cut a nigga off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss, you a worker, bitch, I make bloody moves. Now she say she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club, just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them banks so much, I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a fuck about who ain't fond of me. Drop two mixtapes in 6 months, what bitch working as hard as me? I don't bother with these hoes, don't let these hoes bother me. They see pictures, they say ghosts, bitch, I'm who they tryna be. Look, I might just chill in some babe, I might just chill with your boo, I might just spill on your babe. My pussy feel like a lake, he wanna swim with his face. I'm like, okay, I let him get what he want. He buy me East and LeBron.
If you see that interview with Snoop, he's talking about like these mumble rappers and that whole genre, this whole new genre of shit. He's like, he's making fun of it. It has its place. I get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I grew up with the shittiest Bay Area rap to the best Bay Area rap to fucking
right, which never,
everything across
which
the
never
nation to,
really
to French. Yeah. My fucking French,
oh, French rap's cool, yeah.
My French stepfather from Marseille would play me fucking rap music from France.
Huge French rap.
Huge.
Oh, see,
their fucking hip hop fucking community over there is deep. But I mean, I get this. At the same time, I don't necessarily appreciate it because I'm not there on that perspective, I think age wise.
Maybe.
So
I mean, it's, you know,
I get it. It's raw. It hits. If I'm okay,
yeah,
you get me. I'm
say,
34.
The production value is good.
You put me in the hottest club, let's say Temple downtown in the city. You give me a few drinks. I got a couple of chicks. I got my homies.
Yeah.
You know, I put on a thizz face. I get on the dance floor. I feel it. I get it. But anything deeper than that, no. It's, you know what I mean? It's like it's a. Explorative of oneself. It's like, oh, this is me, this is what I do, this is who I am. It's very vain, superficial. You know what I mean? Am I coming across? Am I being like fucking eloquent enough? I don't know. There's like this thing that I'm trying to explain, but I just can't fucking get the words for it.
I think that's just how it is now. It's trap music.
It's like a fraction of a fraction of the type of music that's around.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
Fine. But it's
at the same time, it's literally a way from, you know, it's big when the white kid community is obsessed with this shit. I played this instantly at the bar, and all the fucking the young kids were like,
just turned up,
turned instantly, like that. They're like, oh, that's my shit. It's like,
because you said it, it hits,
yeah,
right. Production wise, it's great. Is she a musician? I don't know.
No. I mean, did she write the lyrics? I don't know. It's her story, but did she write the lyrics? Maybe. Maybe I'm not giving her enough credit because she's a stripper. I don't know. I mean, the tracks, like, I mean, it's all like superficial shit. I have red bottom shoes, expensive. You know what I'm talking about?
Christian Louboutin. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like those shoes with the fucking red paint on the whatever the fuck is on the bottom. And, you know, like, I used to strip. I don't have to no more. I pay my mama's bills, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know.
And then there's another one I played. An even younger guy called Lil Pump.
Mm-hmm.
And this track is so hot, people are fucking always Snapchatting the shit.
Sure.
Gucci Gang.
Mm-hmm.
I played this, and even the old people were like, what the fuck is this? It hit that
hard. If the old people were moving, it works.
It's almost mathematics. It's mathematically perfectly stupid.
I think you're right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
it's like, Two plus two is four. Give me $1 million.
We've come to a point where we should be. There almost should be an algorithm to what people are going to like. At this point, maybe there is. And we just don't
it's like
know.
The brain hits the omega state. You take a back seat and you go for the ride instead of thinking deeply. You know, in the alpha state where you're like totally aware what's going on.
I'm curious.
It lets the brain relax in the stupidity, but it's not bad. I like it.
Right, because it is still entertainment. So
it is. That's, so I mean, it's raw. It's just what it is. It's entertainment. Yeah.
But the problem you're saying is essentially it's soulless. Is that
I don't know. I'm not saying that. I mean, I don't know them personally. I know Morrissey.
Right.
I know more about Morrissey than Morrissey knows about himself. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
You know, I read his body language. I listen to his interviews. I've read things that he's written outside of music. I don't know. I don't know Lil Pump. I don't know Cardi B.
Or Lil Uzi Vert or something. Yeah.
Yeah, Lil Uzi Vert. Kodak Black. I don't even get me started with that fucking guy. Guy's fucking mildly retarded.
Oh.
Someone needs to smother that guy. You know what I mean? That whole. He's. In public, you catch him by themselves on the right corner with none of their fucking people around. like a lot of my friends, of my friends, like, including me, because I come from the fucking some of the shittiest neighborhoods in the city.
Right.
I have two fucking forms of speaking. I'm speaking to you directly as an adult male to another adult male.
Right.
You know what I mean? Proper English.
Yeah.
But you get me from my friends I grew up with. Oh, I have a whole different way of talking.
Right.
Same thing with these people. Same fucking
and
thing.
In their defense,
anyone in this industry, in the music industry,
in their defense, they're high as Jeezy. They're high
Eminem.
They're high as fuck.
Yeah,
If you try to interview me when I'm high as fuck, I'm probably going to be talking like that too. I don't know, but I don't know.
They're, it's also essentially it's that phrase. They're feeling themselves. You know where that phrase comes from? That's Mac Dre. That's Bay Area. They stole that whole concept from us.
I hear that a lot
because I'm one of them.
Right.
I'm taking credit for that genre.
Look, I love Bay Area hip hop.
Oh,
it never seemed to.
Oh,
leave.
Next episode.
It never left the Bay though. No, really.
It's still, it didn't. Dude,
I'm just saying. It's great, but you're right.
The game
influence and
changed
vernacular.
Here.
Yeah, vernacular definitely.
It didn't start here, but it changed here. It evolved here.
I appreciate it.
It became deeper, more artistic.
Exactly.
Blues, jazz roots.
It seemed really creative.
Guapole.
Oof.
She's the epitome of what,
you know. She just played
all genres of music accumulated.
She played a New Year's show at Yoshi's in Oakland.
You're breaking my heart.
Yeah.
I didn't go to it. You're breaking my heart.
I know. I was working.
I want to play
Guapole.
Oh no! I want to. Can we end with that?
Oh, we're definitely.
I want to play Gucci Gang by Lil Pump because I mean this shit had me going.
Sure.
It's that mathematically stupid and perfect at the same time.
If it hits, it hits. You know.
Bang bang.
Gucci Gang, oh,
that's it right now,
T-Man. Lil Pump, Gucci Gang,
big head on the beat.
Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang,
Gucci Gang.
Spread thin racks on new chain.
Yeah.
My bitch love do cocaine.
Ooh.
I fuck a bitch, I forgot name.
Yeah.
I can't buy men no wet rain.
Ooh.
Rather go and buy ball Bangs. Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Gucci gang,
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
Gucci gang.
Spent the race on new chain. My bitch love do cocaine. Ooh, I fuck a bitch, I forgot name. Yeah, I can't buy no Ben wet rain. Ooh, rather go and buy Balmain's. Ayy. Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
Gucci gang.
My lean cost more than your rent.
It do.
Ooh, your mama still live in the tent. Yeah, still slanging dope in the jets. Huh?
Yeah.
Me and my grandma take meds.
Ooh,
none of this shit be new to me.
Nope.
Fuck a my teacher called tutory.
Yeah.
Bought some red bars, cost hella G's.
Huh?
Fuck your airline, fuck your company.
Fuck it.
Bitch, your breath smell like some cigarettes.
Cigarette.
I'd rather fuck a bitch from the project.
Yeah.
They kick me out the plane off Percocet. Now Lil Pump flying private jet.
Yeah.
Everybody scream fuck WestJet.
Fuck em.
Lil Pump still stuck that meth.
Yeah.
Hundred on wrist, sippin' on tape. Fuck a little bitch, make a pussy wet.
What?
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
Gucci gang.
Spread thin racks on new chain. My bitch love do cocaine.
Yeah.
I fuck a bitch, I forgot name. I can't buy me no wet rain. Rather go and buy ball man.
Yeah.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Turn it down because I fucking figured it out. Okay. Wow. This there's three.
It works.
There's three points of. There's three elements in here that's creating this fucking new generation.
Mm-hmm.
Nickelodeon. Emphasis on shows like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and SpongeBob.
No, that's Adult Swim. It's comedy.
Yeah, Adult Swim.
Cartoon Network.
Cartoon Network.
Yeah,
yeah. And then you have classic hip hop. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The basis of it. You know, the roots from the blues to the jazz to the rock and roll to the pop to the hip hop. And you boom, you have Wu-Tang. All these fucking, like, you know, these dudes that just spit. And
yeah.
It's fucking, it hits. It means something. And then you have youth with the attitude of, I don't give a fuck. This is what I do. Fuck you. This is how I live. You know nothing. This is what we're doing. That's it. Those three things coming together. You got Lil Pump, Gucci Gang.
So this is modern punk rock.
It's my new. I listen to nothing else from now on.
Trap music.
No, not trap music. I'm talking about. It's not even trap music anymore. It's evolved away from that. Trap music is a very specific sound. This has evolved into EDM, dance.
That no, that's
hip hop, trap.
That's very Migos.
Yeah. No.
YRN1.
You have give it to me. It's evolved.
Which was 2013. I believe.
Yeah, it's evolved.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
the kids took
it's
it like
pretty
all right,
similar.
Took I'll take that and run with it.
Okay, so
you ever heard the local group that I swear to God these kids are taking all the fucking shit from the Bay, the Wolf Pack. You remember the Wolf Pack?
I remember that documentary about those weird kids in Brooklyn or whatever.
No. The Wolf Pack is a group from the fucking all around the East Bay, and they had one Southern kid in it. Fuck if I can fucking find it.
What, a rap group?
Yeah, it's a group.
Are they still active or what?
I don't think so. Shit.
Well, what's the significance?
Fuck, I'm trying to fucking. What's the name of the track? My Adidas? No, that's.
My Dingley? Like Air?
No, it's. Anyways.
Nashville.
It's a bunch of young kids that, like, started, like, changing the fucking. They started changing the fucking. The hyphy movement in the Bay Area. They took it, like. Because they brought in a Southern kid. And it's like the sound was different. It was good. It was fucking good, man.
That's garbage. I don't like that.
No. Oh, it's not the Wolf Pack. It's the Pack. That's what it is. Okay. Yeah, that's what it is. I got it. I want to play the number one Vans. There you go. I mean, it all started here.
What is this?
Just listen.
The Pack.
The Pack.
My Vans look clean.
Got my Vans on, finna walk out the dough. Put five on the grape so you know I'm gon' blow. Got the new pack shoe, bought it right out the dough. I let the dope girls, dope boys all go. Man, if you really tight, then you gotta give Vans. See me in the club, bitch, I'm a grown man. If you see me at a party, then it must be crack. Cost $36, all black, yes. Like my niggas make slap and we get close. Man, fuck coke whites, cause my Vans fucking go. Got new top sellers, finna fly like kites. Go sleep in the day, go to parties at night. Man, I'm from B-Town and all my niggas get light. Man, we be sporting Vans and we throw away Nikes. You wanna get right, stop buying those Nikes. Some new fucking Vans and you bet you look icy. Hey.
Okay. Based Boys. Off the Based Boys album. 2007. Okay.
Yeah, dude. I was feeling this 10 years ago.
Okay.
I was a little too old for it, but I was still feeling it, dude. But see, I'm saying, like, that was us.
This is different, though. This is.
It is different, yeah. But it's a different take.
It's a little more musical.
It's crossing genres. Honestly. We're talking about Vans and the hip hop community, yeah. Being from the Bay, like, you know, like fucking slang and
yeah.
Like
that. Hyphy was still kind of going in 07.
This is when the movement. Not failed.
It's kind of going away.
Failed, but fell under and changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these guys brought it up different. Then they fell off.
Yeah, whatever happened to Based? Like, remember Lil B? Based God. You remember from Oakland?
Vaguely familiar.
Lil B? It was like, stood for Little Bitch. But like, he didn't, you know, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
He literally made an album called I'm Gay. Even though he wasn't, just to piss off other rappers. It was amazing. It was incredible.
That's the thing.
I love that
guy.
We
just figured it out. I mean, these kids.
Nobody
does
the shit.
It's a big, it's the Johnny Cash. It's the Johnny Cash, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I like that a lot. Yeah. It's so good.
I'm starting to get it now. This is all I listen to from now on.
See, that was, like, Lil B was so prolific. I think he had, like, 700 tracks or something, and he was only, like, 24 years old.
Wow.
You know, he would just put out shit, you know? I mean...
an album a day.
Please, if anybody knows what happened to Lil B, I'm sure he's still going, because, I mean, you can't stop it. But he pissed off a lot of people.
Did he?
Because he was just, he didn't give a fuck, dude. There's so many, his videos were incredible. He would just go to, like, skate parks, or, like, he would just go to, like, the street and just record himself, or have somebody, there's a song called I'ma Eat the Whole Ass, and he just talks about eating ass, and he's wearing, like, a woman's blazer he bought from, like, JCPenney, and, like, a hat, and just, like, some weird fedora. And he's just like in a restaurant.
You know what it is?
It's incredible. It's amazing.
A total. I can see like a bunch of college kids having a Socratic seminar. And be like, all right, they're brainstorming on what they're going to produce as an art piece. And they get their one like, you know, street cred person in the group. Be like, all right, you're the face of it. But we're all going to write for this. You know what I mean? It's an art project. It's fucking perfect. I love it.
Like in living color, is that
right? Yeah, exactly. And there's like one little razor point, pinpoint.
Although that I should have that, but yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know, but the whole like Based, you know, that whole movement, I don't know. That's pure Bay Area, right?
Yeah.
There were no. There's this album from the pack is called Based Boys.
Yeah.
Right, Lil B, Based God. Like, I don't know.
Was he in the group?
Might have been. Fuck, it's been like over 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, nothing's scarier than when the youth decides to join together and be like, fuck you.
That's good, man. If anything, I'd be
it's
afraid.
Refreshing.
No, honestly, it's and it's the only thing that gives me hope. And I want to end this on hope because even though we may not understand it. I mean, we understand it like intellectually, but maybe not like, you know, personally. But the fact that there is something out there that makes kids say "fuck you" is good. That's a good thing. That's inherently a good thing.
Yeah.
Once kids stop doing that, that's dangerous.
Man. Yeah.
Then
it
we
becomes
get
Nazi
like,
Germany.
Yeah. Or we get the draft, and we get, you know, I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. The counterculture is good, whether or not we understand it. It may be a good thing because we're
it's
over
ever
30.
Evolving. Yeah.
Don't trust anybody over 30, right? So
yeah.
Don't trust anything we're saying, kids. That's probably true.
Shit.
Our brains are turning to mush.
Are we fading out to Guapale? Because
that, you know what? Yes. Yes, we are.
Can
we're going to stick to the Bay. Yeah, why not?
You want to just do our biggest hit ever? Closer?
No, we've been doing... new, right?
She come out with something new?
Yeah, from her new
yeah,
album.
Yeah, but her first big
Dream
hit
Seeker came out this year.
Her
last
big,
year.
Her first
sorry,
big hit. This is so perfect. No?
It's up to you.
It's not you? I mean, it's your call, buddy. I've had the last like five tracks, so I'll let you
I feel like we'll fade out with Guapalé's last track from her new album, Dreamseeker, entitled Cool Breeze.
Perfect beginning to an end.
Thank you for joining us on this New Year edition of Mostly Music. I'm Ignatius Palafox.
And I am still the low spark.
Turning off.
I told you.